This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and sit in our separate homes across the city and talk about it.
Yeah, so this is a real you, Molly, can't have any because I made cookies and you can't have any.
Oh my God, this is terrible. I thought that I was in your inner circle, Matthew, and that all of our listeners were outside of it. But now I'm just with our listeners here. And I can't have any.
That's true. But, like, I mean, the listeners, they're so happy to have you. They're going to, like, take you into their virtual drum circle. They're going to drum you. They're going to drum with you.
So, like, sometime within the past, like, half a year, Ash was somewhere with another family from our school. And the father of the family said something about, like, we should all get together and do a drum circle. And Ash could not tell whether this guy, I mean, we don't know this guy well enough to know whether he was joking or not. But ever since then, I've desperately been wanting to do it, but he's never mentioned it again. And I don't know if he was joking or not. So I don't know if I should bring it up or not.
I mean, like, to go back to a recent episode, that's sort of like how someone would introduce the idea of an orgy, like as a joke, probably.
Yes.
Like, you know, wouldn't it be crazy if we got together for a drum circle?
And then you're in this awkward position of, like, do I out myself as that person who wants to do the drum circle / orgy?
You should, like, go for it and say, like, you know, hey, Tim, remember when you mentioned the drum circle? Like, were you serious? And if so, like, I'm in.
Okay.
Take a chance.
Okay. Well, I'll wait until we're not on lockdown anymore.
That's fair.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
actually,
I feel like if you're going to have a drum circle, at least you should do it at a time when it's, like, you know, safe public health wise.
I think that's true. And, you know, you could attempt to do, like, a Zoom drum circle. I think the latency issues would make it, well, it would make it worse than a regular drum circle.
I'm glad we figured that out. Okay,
actually, what it might result in is polyrhythms.
Oh, wow, that sounds hot.
I know, right?
Yeah. Have you ever gone polyrhythmic?
Gone polyrhythmic? I've been thinking about it.
Yeah, you and Lori should check it out.
Like, the whole, like, 4-4 time signature is so played out.
Okay, wait, did we say this is an episode about almond extract?
Nope.
Okay, so this is an episode about almond extract. Here we are in early May, and I feel like
almond season?
I mean, almond flavored things are seasonless.
Right.
But I do think of, I don't know, this is as good a time as any to talk about almond extract.
Yeah, I think it, well, I mean, because it's not a seasonal thing, it's always almond extract season.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that was what I was pointing toward, I guess. Okay. So, Matthew, hold on. Let's start, as we always used to do, by walking down memory lane. At least this time we'll do it separately, proper social distancing style.
Okay.
All right. You go walk down your memory lane.
Usually we skip down memory lane holding hands.
Yeah. And then we kick the can every now and then.
Then we kick the can, and then we arrive at the Emerald City.
Yeah. All right. So, Matthew, take it away. Show me down your memory lane.
Okay. So, my memory lane for almond extract, like, I couldn't think of any, like, almond extract stories from my youth, but here's my memory lane. When we were talking about doing this episode, I'm like, okay, I'm pretty sure we do have almond extract in the house. Let me check. Oh, yeah, we've got a big bottle of almond extract from Penzi Spices, where, you know, we love to order from about once a year. And I looked at this bottle of almond extract and I was like, oh, what things have we been making with almond extract? I don't really remember any recently. And we had labeled the bottle. It's from 2010 and it is full.
Oh, my God. Really?
I mean, possibly as much as like 2 teaspoons had been used.
Wow. Matthew, if I could come over to your house right now, I would totally come over and get some almond extract, because we generally buy like the, you know, whatever small bottle of it you can get at the regular old grocery store. And we blow through that stuff.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear what you make.
Well, there's just one thing in particular that we make, and I'm going to get to that later. But first, I want to tell you, I want to stay on memory lane, because that's where I am. So I think that I first became aware of almond extract. Well, okay. Honestly, I think that the first thing I ever noticed that at least had an almond extract vibe going on, and actually maybe this doesn't count at all, but my mom used to have a tin of Amaretti cookies.
Oh, no, I think that totally counts. I think those are made with almond extract.
Well, so I remember where this tin was in the house that we lived in until I was 13, there was a cabinet that was like below counter level. And I think the cabinet was actually like my parents' liquor cabinet.
Nice.
I think. Clearly, I wasn't that interested in it.
Yeah, did you ever raid the liquor cabinet as a kid?
I never raided the liquor cabinet. But I seem to remember that at the back of this cabinet, there was this weird like half shelf that didn't cover the whole depth of the cabinet. And I remember there being things on this shelf. And one of the things was one of those really quite beautiful tins of like from Italy, Amaretti cookies.
Oh, yeah. The tin is the best part of those.
The tin is totally the best part. And they came inside wrapped in like this thin, like vellum paper that was printed. It was really a beautiful experience. And I was very drawn to this tin. And every now and then I remember opening it up and like smelling these cookies. And I remember tasting one and being revolted by it. Like it was so disgusting.
Yeah, very grown up flavor, I think.
Oh, I hated it. Anyway, so I think I was very suspicious of things that I associated with that kind of very perfumey, almondy, almost like liquor type smell that almond extract can sometimes have.
Yeah, totally.
But then I remember my freshman year at Stanford, I was living in this dorm called Kimball, and it had a really good dining hall, like super good dining hall.
Wow, I didn't know. And like, you know, I went to college like a couple of years before you, and our dining hall was terrible. And then like
really?
Shortly, yeah. And then like shortly after I left, that's when I heard that like, oh, they like fired the company that ran the dining halls and brought in good food. I'm like, thanks a lot.
I think that, you know, there was like some big company that ran this one, whatever it was, like Bonjour Catering or something
Marriott.
Like that. Bon Appetit
yeah.
Catering or something. But the chef who ran the actual kitchen of our dining hall was like a pretty nice guy and was pretty cool. They had above the salad bar a whole bunch of different Bundt cakes, and they were pretty much always there consistently.
Wow.
The same types of Bundt cakes up above the salad bar. And I remember choosing one of them. It looked like a poppy seed Bundt cake. But anyway, it was filled with almond extract. And I think that was the first time I'd ever truly eaten like an almond extract flavored pastry. And I thought that it was, I mean, I begged the dining hall to give me the recipe because I wanted to give it to my mother back in Oklahoma and see if she would make it for me.
Okay, I have two questions. Did they give you the recipe?
No. I think that they probably brought it in from somewhere else, to be honest.
And second, did the local proletariat like ever find out that the kids at Stanford had access to an unlimited Bundt cake bar? And if so, was that the thing that started the revolution?
I think it was. That was what Marie Antoinette was talking
exactly.
about. Yeah, let those Stanford students eat
Bundt cake. Right.
Anyway, but yeah, I remember finding this cake like unbelievably good. Like just, you know, like are there some desserts in your memory lane where they are so good that it like changes everything for you? Like
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely like the first time I had like a flourless chocolate cake.
Totally.
I don't remember. Like, yeah. It would have been when I was a kid, but like definitely like, oh, wow. Like, I didn't know dessert could be like more dessert than anything I've experienced before.
Yeah, there was something about this cake. It like pushed all these like buttons in me. It was so delicious. And for a while afterward, whenever I would see a poppy seed cake in a bakery or something like that, I would order it. And it took me a long time to understand that even though I think the pairing of almond and poppy seed is pretty classic in a lot of cuisines, a lot of poppy seed cakes just have like lemon zest or something and they don't have almond extract.
Right. So wife of the show, Lori, mentioned that she used to love getting the grocery store almond poppy seed muffins, like especially like when she was working as a young person in Seattle. But also they had, remember when we bought a pudding cake at QFC?
Yes, a lemon pudding cake.
Right, because they also have had and may still have the almond poppy seed pudding cake, which I'm going to bet is probably pretty similar to the Bundt cake that you fell in love with as a young woman.
I agree. It probably is. I mean, I think it's a very typical cake. But ever since I had that Bundt cake all those many years ago.
Ever since I had that Bundt cake.
I now am very disappointed anytime I encounter a poppy seed like cake or muffin or something that is like a lemon poppy seed instead of almond poppy seed. Like I want nothing to do with that. I want the almond poppy seed.
No, I totally agree.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my memory lane. And that really awakened me to like the whole idea of almond flavored desserts. And of course, you can get almond flavor into baked goods in so many different ways, right? With like almond paste or with marzipan or almond extract. But today we're just going to focus on almond extract.
Yes. So can I tell you what almond extract is?
Please.
Because
please.
I did not know this, even though I feel like I should have, that almond extract is usually not made from almonds.
It's not?
Yeah. So almond extract is typically made from stone fruit pits, which are toxic, but obviously are processed in such a way that that the result is not toxic.
Why? Hold on. So why is it not made from almonds?
Because almonds are expensive and you can sell them to people to eat as almonds.
Yeah. Okay.
Whereas like a peach pit or an apricot pit or bitter almonds, which are not edible as almonds, you can process them and produce like a edible almond oil or almond flavored oil from that and then mix that with alcohol and water to make almond extract.
Ah, so how do they extract it? How do what do they do with the pit to get the flavor out?
They crush it. They crush it and press the oil out. And then there's some process that they use to like purify and detoxify the oil. Refine it, I guess is the word.
And is this what we call almond oil?
So the
it's coming from stone fruit pits?
Yeah. So you can call your oil, like, you know, the FDA allows, you can call it almond extract and you can call it almond oil if it's made from bitter almonds. And technically bitter almonds are some kind of almond or some kind of stone fruit pit. Either of those can be called bitter almonds.
What an interesting sleight of hand.
Yeah, right?
That's fascinating.
But the thing is, like, a peach and an almond are almost the same species. I mean, they're the same genus.
Yeah, I get it. And, you know, when I think about, for instance, when I make apricot jam, I don't know if I gave you a jar of the apricot jam I made last summer. I've now made it two summers in a row. So I make the jam formula that I've been making for a long time, but I have started doing this slight tweak on it that I learned about from Samin Nosrat in the New York Times, where I take, so again, we're talking about apricot jam. I take the pits of the apricot. I crush them so I pull the, so then like the outer husk of the pit comes off and I can take the kernel out, which looks like a tiny like Marcona almond.
Right.
And then you toast it in a hot oven to apparently deactivate the toxin in the kernel.
Yeah, which is cyanide.
Okay, great. And then you collect all those little kernels and put them in cheesecloth and you simmer that little cheesecloth pouch in your apricot jam as it's simmering.
Nice.
And so what I found is, I think if you were to taste a jar of this jam compared to my usual apricot jam, they're in all ways the same, except one has
except
this
the one
pouch
of them has a sack of pits in the jar.
One has a sack of pits in the jar. No, but it does have this slight, like slight almond floral fragrance. Like it's like almonds and like the smell of cherry blossoms sort of. I know I'm sounding like a wine writer now.
Mm-hmm.
Hey.
Yeah.
I'm a wine writer now, guys. I've reinvented myself in this lockdown.
Oh, great.
I'm a wine writer. But what I do is I just describe jam.
Okay, but I was going to ask you, like, what are like three of your top cabs that have good structure?
Oh man, my favorite
number one,
is Charles
New York
Shaw.
Yellow.
I just love. So, I have a friend. I will not say what this person's name is.
First name Charles.
This person used to always buy Charles Shaw, and we would go over to this person's house for dinner. And they would offer some wine and then they would pour it. And I mean, I cannot tell you how bad this wine was. And like, I'm not somebody who spends a lot of money on wine. But anyway,
No, you're a wine writer.
So here is my hot take on Charles Shaw. Two thumbs down.
Okay, so your hot take is the $2 wine is not great.
Yeah.
Okay.
But back to the apricot kernels. It is amazing how much almond fragrance comes off these things when they come out of the oven, like
oh,
when you've
yeah.
just toasted them. And then even, you know, yeah, as I said, it comes through in the jam. Anyway, so I don't know why I'm acting all surprised that you can take the kernels of stone fruits and press them and call that almond extract, but it's true. It's amazing how much it smells like almond extract.
Many years ago, we're back to memory lane now. I've traipsed off like I'm
oh
having.
God, we've been to so many places on this episode.
Yeah, many years ago, our friend Chef Dana Cree.
Yeah,
like we like had a party at her house, and one of the things she made was, I can't remember if it was like a mousse or like an ice cream, but it was made with cherry pits and like a cream that you like infuse with cherry pits, which are also in the same family, but are a much bigger pain in the ass to extract because they're so small and you need so many of them.
Mm-hmm. Was it really almondy? Like both
it was,
almondy
yeah.
and cherry-y? Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Matthew, is there anything else you want to tell me about almond extract?
No, like I couldn't find any like you know, corporate intrigue or did you know like almond extract almond extract was found like, you know, in the tomb of King Tut or something historical like we sometimes come up with. It's like, you know, I think probably using pits to extract an almond flavor is a pretty old practice, but almond extract and like, you know, extracts themselves, I think, are relatively industrial.
Hmm. Okay. So, Matthew, what is this cookie that you made that we can't have any of?
Okay. Wait, let me grab it so I can hold it up so you can see the cookie.
Okay.
So these are called almond meltaway cookies.
It's a frosted
cookie.
Okay. Is it? Ah, I see now. I couldn't tell if it was kind of like a meringue.
Yes. I don't know where my camera is. There it is.
Okay.
We'll post a photo.
It looks like kind of a lumpy sugar cookie mm-hmm. with a white frosting on
yeah,
top.
Yeah, I did a bad job of shaping these cookies.
I can tell.
It said to like roll them into a ball, but then my hands got kind of greasy, and then it said to smash the ball
Matthew.
With the bottom of a glass, and it was sticking to the bottom of the glass. But
so they have a chewy texture.
They have kind of a fall apart texture. Like, you know, there's not a lot of chew to them, and they have a little bit of like kind of you know, cookie dough texture to them because you bake them only for like 8 minutes.
And how are they? Do you recommend these cookies?
Oh yeah, we'll post a link to the recipe. They're very tasty.
And
they've got a lot of almond extract. There's like, you know, a teaspoon and a half or 2 teaspoons in the cookies and like a teaspoon and a half in the glaze, maybe something like that.
Oh my gosh, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so at this rate, like in just like 15 more years or so, we will have used up this bottle of almond extract, which by the way, like it never goes bad. Like even though it's 10 years old, it's fine.
Well, as soon as we are out of lockdown, I'm coming over and I'm taking at least half of that bottle.
You're going to siphon it off the way you've been stealing gas from my truck.
I am. So what we always make and how we wind up going through almond extract so quickly is, so Amanda Hesser, her, you know, sort of breakout book was called Cooking for Mr. Latte.
I haven't thought about this book in so many years. I'm so glad you're bringing it up.
A million years ago. This was, I remember, this was, gosh, was this the very early 2000s.
Yeah, like that's
2002,
right.
2003 kind of thing. This is a food memoir with recipes. It has a lot of really great recipes.
Absolutely.
In it. I mean, Amanda Hessert just has such a classic style. Anyway, this cake, she just calls it an almond cake. And as I recall, I don't have it right in front of me. The recipe, she got it from her mother-in-law.
Okay.
And
Tad's
it
mom.
Is from Tad's mom, Mr. Latte's mom. It is one of those cakes that is really ugly. You bake it in a springform pan, and it looks like it's going to be a totally normal, kind of beautiful golden-topped cake when you pull it out.
But then surprise!
Then it collapses like an asteroid crater.
I want to try this. This sounds great.
It's got a really wonderful batter. The batter has sour cream, egg yolks, or maybe whole eggs. I can't remember at this moment. Butter, obviously, a whole tube of almond paste.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, I think, a 7-ounce tube of almond paste.
Oh, wow.
Plus almond extract.
I mean, that sounds fun because, like, you know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to, like, squeeze the whole tube of toothpaste. And that's very wasteful. But if you, like, squeeze it into a cake, then that's good. I mean, don't squeeze toothpaste into a cake. I mean, almond paste.
Yeah. Well, you can't really squeeze almond paste, Matthew. It's sort of the texture of like slightly dried out Play-Doh.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So you crumble it into the cake batter as the mixer's going. Anyway, but so you can imagine the texture you get in this finished cake, especially the fudgy part in the middle that's kind of collapsed.
Yes.
Anyway, I have to say the one thing that our household has probably made this cake 20 times. It is, I have to say, I'm very happy about this. Ash loves this cake so much that they decided to learn how to make this cake, which is a really big deal because Ash had never baked a cake before.
And how did it go?
Beautifully. So this was the first cake Ash ever learned how to make. And Ash now is the official almond cake baker in our house. And I love it because usually I'm the baker of all things in our house. And I just love that, like, Ash loves this cake so much that they will just, like, spontaneously bake an almond cake.
I love that. And I love that it's a cake that doesn't have to look pretty because, like, that's always the thing I worry about when I'm baking something. Like, you know, maybe this is going to come out looking all, like, lumpy. But it's supposed to be lumpy.
No, this cake, seriously, it's supposed to fall in the middle. It's like a fallen souffle kind of situation. And the other thing is, I think that the original recipe says to dust it with powdered sugar before you serve it. I've never done that. We just embrace the, like, you know, the simplicity of it. This cake is amazing. And, oh, what I was going to say, though, is I think it calls for like a teaspoon or maybe a teaspoon and a half of almond extract in the batter.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually use a tiny bit less, which shocks me. But I find that between the almond paste and the almond extract, it leaves a little bit of a aftertaste in my mouth if we use the full amount of extract. So we use a little bit less.
Okay. I'm definitely going to make this. I assume this recipe is online or I can dig up a copy of Cooking for Mr. Latte.
I think I wrote about it a million years ago on Orangette.
Great. Let's link to one of your old blog posts.
Yes.
This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, this weekend I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on Masterclass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about, like, the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you. If you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best, you go to Masterclass. You can you know, learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to Masterclass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Looking for some amazing TV to stream? Indulge yourself with the hits on Hulu you can't miss. Dive in with Barney, Ted, Robin, and the gang on How I Met Your Mother. All 9 seasons are now streaming on Hulu. Then you can move to Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, and My Wife and Kids. We're talking every episode and every season of these shows. We're talking huge hits, streaming on Hulu whenever you're in the mood. Now we're talking.
We'll post a link to that recipe. Please don't read my blog post.
I just read it. It was great.
Oh, God. Ugh.
Okay. Okay. Can we go back to the cookie recipe for a minute? Because I didn't credit it, and I need to, because there's something we need to talk about, which is this recipe is from Leanne Wilkes, who is a cookbook writer, and her blog, which is called Your Home-Based Mom.
Wait, is there a different kind of mom? Like your work-based mom?
Well, I guess like you can have a work wife, maybe.
You can have a work mom?
Maybe you could have a work mom.
Am I your work mom, Matthew?
I don't think of you that way, but if you want
am I your work wife?
I think so.
You're my work daddy.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
Oops. You're my
Zoom says we're out of time. Sorry, gotta go forever. wait, I have a question that may or may not be related to these nicknames, which is, if you were nicknamed after a beverage like Mr. Latte, what would your nickname be? Mine would be Mr. Ice Water.
That is hot.
It's literally not.
I think I would be... I don't know.
Okay, well, I mean, you're a wine writer, so I think we're going to call you, what's like a fancy wine? Ms. Chateau Neuf du Pape.
Oh,
no,
that's me.
Sauterne.
Yes, I'm a dessert wine. I'm sweet.
You are a tall drink of dessert wine. I've always said that.
Ah, yes. I love my dessert wine, tall and...
In like a beer stein.
Refreshing. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, with ice up to the rim.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, so we've established that you're my work daddy.
Uh-huh. Why? Why do I have to go through these?
I just like saying it over and over again to make you squirm.
Fine, then you're my home-based mom.
Okay.
Take that.
I am home-based. I'm in my own closet right now.
That's right.
Okay, hold on. So, hold on. Matthew, what else do you do with almond extract?
Obviously nothing, or I wouldn't have a completely full bottle after 10 years. But
I think it's interesting that the first thing you thought of was cookies, because I always think of cake, like even like quick bread type cakes.
Well, I'm neither much of a cake eater nor a cake baker. And so what I did was, I think I went to Taste of Home and found an article like 34 recipes that use almond extract. We can link to that as well. And I looked through and I stopped at the first thing. I'm like, okay, I can make this. It's a cookie. And so I made that and it was good.
Cool. I see here on the agenda that one of the items is compound butter.
Well, yeah. So I think probably on that same list, there was a recipe for honey and almond butter. And you could like put it on a biscuit. I thought that sounded good.
Okay. I do. I guess that does sound good. When I think of compound butter, I tend to think of like blue cheese butter melting on top of a steak.
Yeah, I know.
Something.
Or like, you know, parsley and herbs and shit.
Yeah,
but you can
herbs and shit.
You can smush anything into butter.
That's true. So almond extract all the way. What about, when you guys make coconut macaroons? Because doesn't wife of the show Lori sometimes make coconut macaroons?
Occasionally.
Does wife of the show Lori put almond extract?
Well, I don't think so. But when we were talking about it, we decided it was a good idea. And we're going to do that sometime soon if we can get our hands on some dried coconut, which we're currently out of.
Okay.
Do you make coconut macaroons? And if so, do you put almond extract in them?
There was a period in my life when I was really into coconut macaroons, and I frequently made them at home. And I would do like a chocolate ganache drizzle on top.
Sure.
I think there's a recipe in my first book for that, actually. But I've never put almond extract in them.
It sounds good, though, right?
It sounds really good. It sounds very like candy bar-y.
Let's do it. Let's make a pact right now that someday you and I are going to make coconut macaroons with almond extract.
Someday. Yes. Pinky swear.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Matthew, should we talk about any other extracts?
Yeah, or I think we should.
This is our almond extract.
Just briefly.
Episode.
I know this is our almond extract episode, but I don't think we're ever going to do like a coconut extract episode. Maybe another 10 years from now when I will have used another 2 teaspoons of almond extract. But but for now, like the other non-vanilla extract that we do use regularly is mint, and we use it for flavoring whipped cream for making icebox cake, and that is fantastic.
Is it a peppermint extract, like you would put in like peppermint bark?
So that is a good question, and is also a good segue into our next segment, because I looked up what are all of the extracts that McCormick, the largest maker of extracts, makes. And
are you going to give me a quiz?
I am. There was mint extract and there was peppermint extract. So I don't know if mint extract means like spearmint extract.
Which one do you think you have?
So if I had to guess, I would say like when we recently had an icebox cake, I think it was spearmint flavored, not peppermint flavored, but I'm not sure. I don't know if I can always tell the difference.
Well, I picture, I think about the flavor of like mint chip ice cream as being a bit different from the flavor of like a peppermint ice cream.
Yeah, me too.
So I think maybe that's the difference.
That one is ice cream flavored and one is peppermint bark flavored.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
that's exactly right.
Are you ready for the quiz?
Okay.
So yeah. I looked at, as I say, I went to the McCormick Spice and Extract Concern website, and I was very concerned because there was a big list of all the extracts they make, and I'm going to read you a list, and some of these are real, and some of them are things I made up. Ready?
Ready.
Number one, cake batter.
Real.
Real. Maplene.
False.
No, it's real, and I want you to right now Google Maplene, because the packaging is amazing. It is imitation maple extract. There's also non-imitation maple extract.
How do you spell Mapleine?
Oh, it's Mapleine. Or maybe it's Maplene.
Oh, what is this? Maplene.
Isn't the packaging gorgeous?
Hold on.
I love it.
First, it pulled up a different company.
Oh.
Oh, it's like very old school.
It's extremely old school.
Oh, wow. It says Crescent brand.
Yeah. So McCormick has a couple of house brands. Like they make Baker's imitation vanilla extract. That's a McCormick.
Okay. Wow. This packaging is lovely. I wonder if this is only sold in certain markets because...
Possibly. I'm going to look for it someday.
Okay. Okay. Maplene.
Mm-hmm. Root beer.
Okay. Yes.
Real.
True.
Carrot cake.
False.
Correct. Anise.
Oh, a real.
Yes. Cinnamon roll.
I'm afraid it's real. I want it to be false, but I think it's real.
False. Avocado.
Fake.
Fake. Butter.
Real.
Real. Peanut butter.
Real.
It's fake, but I felt like it should be real.
Yeah.
Prune.
Fake.
Fake. Banana.
Real.
Yep. Movie popcorn.
Oh, I think that's probably real.
No, I made it up, but I kind of want it.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Rum.
Real.
Yeah.
Real.
Pumpkin pie.
Real.
Yes. Well done.
Thank you.
I guess from now on, we're calling you Ms. Root Beer Extract.
If there is one of those that seems most offensive to me, it's the butter extract. Like there's some, and maybe the maple. There's something about imitation butter flavor and imitation maple flavor that both just like really don't, I don't like them.
Yeah.
Like
I mean, in principle, I agree. But on the other hand, like sometimes I like fake, you know, butter flavor movie popcorn. And sometimes I like fake maple syrup. So
I never like fake maple syrup. I'll give you the movie theater popcorn. I like that too.
No, but if I'm at like an IHOP, like I will slather on that fake syrup.
Oh, I will not. I don't like that stuff. But maybe if I stay here in my closet long enough, everything will start to seem really appealing to me. So let's see. I mean, today is what, May 7th?
Yep.
Is when this show's going to go live. I don't know. How long do you think we might be here, Matthew?
Oh, like here in your closet?
Here in my closet. Taping from my closet.
A while.
Yeah, so I don't know. Let's check back in July and see how I'm feeling about fake maple flavor.
Mm-hmm. You're on. Someone Great. Will remind us. Like, I won't even set a reminder. One of our listeners is going to remind us in July. Like, how are things going with the fake maple syrup situation?
Okay, great. And they'll probably also ask if we've made our coconut macaroons with almond extract yet.
True. And they might call you Mrs. Butterworth.
They might call me Mrs. Butterworth. They are going to be super excited to read my new book of wine reviews that's coming out.
Is it going to be like a Robert Parker guide? Only it's going to be you, and you're going to be giving ratings out of 100? Or is it going to be more like a, you know, that guy from Gourmet Magazine who'd write like essays about wine?
I haven't decided yet.
Okay.
Stay tuned. A lot of it'll probably also be about jam.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to want you to go for the essays, and I want it to be like an essay about wine, an essay about jam, an essay about jelly, maybe.
An essay about my closet.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like Molly had to step out for a minute, and while she did, I screenshotted her closet, and I'm gonna post it on
really?
What's that, renttherunway.com?
Yeah. So, oh, yeah, let's make some money.
We need to make some money, and we're going to do it by renting out stuff from Molly's closet. So check Instagram at Spilled Milk Podcast for that screenshot. Well, I'll Photoshop in some price tags on there.
You know, my bathrobe is really soft and fuzzy.
Yeah, but let's be real. Like, remember the cosplay person who was like selling her bathwater and people were drinking it and getting very sick? Maybe you didn't hear about this.
Why haven't we ever done that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you rented out like a robe that you wore, like fresh out of the shower, you know, some pervert would definitely pay for that.
Wow. I'm endlessly appreciative of the variety of human life.
Okay. So. Okay. All right, so you can find us online at spilledbathwaterpodcast.com, where you can, for $350, you can buy our bathwater. No, that would be
way too little.
It'd be way too little, and also, like, it's literally the opposite of good social distancing practice to send someone your used bathwater.
Although, Matthew, we have shared bathwater before. Should we remind our listeners of that?
Oh, yeah, but that was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. We haven't done it during the pandemic.
But we are so looking forward to the day when we can once again share a bathwater.
Bath.
All right. So you can find us at, I already mentioned our Instagram, at Spilled Milk Podcast, facebook.com/SpilledMilkPodcast, like where you can tell us about your extracts. Do you like fake maple syrup? What do you put almond extract in? Have you ever roasted a pit? Have you ever hung out at the Peach Pit? Which show was the Peach Pit on? Was it 90210?
90210. Okay. You know, I think we've probably put this out there on Spilled Milk before, but were you more of like a Jason Priestley person or a Luke Perry person?
So Luke Perry was like the intriguing bad boy, right?
Yeah.
So like, I think I would be like more interested in the Luke Perry character, but like me myself definitely more of a Jason Priestley who likes to think of himself as a Luke Perry, but incorrectly.
You're totally Jason Perry. Jason Priestley.
Oh, Jason Perry.
Oh, wow. I just invented a new hybrid character.
Oh, wow. I don't think you invented that hybrid character. I think those two have gotten married in fan fiction many, many, many times.
This is like when June does something and then thinks that she's invented it. Like,
yes.
Mama, do you think anyone has ever let their ice cream melt and stir it up and call it soup? Mama, do you think? Like, this is...
I mean, it's a good idea.
It is. I had to break it to her, though. Like,
yeah,
girlfriend, I've done that hundreds of times.
Yeah, I loved that so much when I was a kid. Like, There was definitely like a period when I was a kid when like I would 100% of the time do that with my ice cream, like smush it with the spoon to like get the process going. So satisfying.
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay.
So until next time, our producer is Abby Circatella. I mean, not next time our producer will also be Abby Circatella. God, I hope so. until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, your home-based podcast.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton. Here's my pinky. Yay!
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.